Okay, fine. So, again, this year before, but we'll do it now. So, as you guys saw when we went to Pot Melach, the way most Ashkenazim now bake matzah is as hard crackery things, which, to be fair, in simple pshat, shouldn't count as bread at all, because we have a category in halacha called pat haba b'kisnin. There's a three-way machloket and shown him what pat haba b'kisnin is. One is that it has like sweet things in the dough, like a cake. A second is that it has a kis, right? It has it's like a hamantaschen or a pie, right? That it has pockets with, and it's filled. And the third is that it's brittle, like a pretzel, right? And if you remember, hard matzah is, and I know this is crazy, hard. which is why Svardim traditionally do not actually make hamotzi on matzah, on Ashkenazi matzah. What? No, we pass on all three. We make hamotzi on all of them. So, it has other things in the dough itself, like cake. It has pockets like pie or hamantaschen, where it's hard and brittle. It's baked hard and brittle, not it dries out like a pretzel or cracker. Well, those are the three things that are pot haba b'kisanin, right? And not straight pot, right? So what's the category of pot, bracket? What is the category of pot haba b'kisanin? What's the halacha? More complicated than that. It's mizono if you eat it not as a suda, and if you're eating it as a meal. So then you wash, make hamotzi, and bench. This is distinct from other mizono, like pasta, that's not true. It's not pasta. Because pot is correct. That's a tavshil, which is mizono. It
doesn't have a pocket.
It doesn't have shura pot. It's not baked. So what about pita's hamotzi. No. It is pockets that are filled with, like, things that are not food-like. Right? So, but it's brittle. That's possibly three. Like a cracker or a pretzel. Any of those three. No, it's not. What raspberry jelly? No, it's sweet. No. So this is a real problem. But this just forces us to ask, okay, so how do we get to the point where we have this matzah? And as you saw yesterday, 2 days, whatever it was, 2 days ago, when David baked the soft matzah, which looks much more like pita. So let's start with the, and I'm sorry, Ellie, but advertisement for Ellie, a summary of these issues, if you forget them and would like to read them when you get to Pesach, will be written by our very own Ellie, who will write it in the Haggadah Companion. He was supposed to have handed it in 40 minutes ago, because it's 10 o'clock. No, no, don't. I gave you my Makarot. I'm not like
Ellie. Ellie, why don't you give the shears to the Rabbi's hearing?
Good idea. I'll go home. No. Okay, fine. So, what evidence do we have? Let's start with what evidence do we have that matzah was originally soft? So, as I talked to the guys in my shear, the proof that everyone thinks is a proof is a non-proof. Let's start with that. Let's see if the guys in my share can start with that. What? Okay, good. Right. The one that everyone thinks they have is a proof is Korech. Because Korech, you're supposed to wrap. You can't wrap with our matzah. Great. That is a bad proof for two reasons. What?
Isn't there?
Why is that a bad proof? Yeah.
Okay, so you can wrap it in. Korech can mean wrapping it in Mar.
So first of all, is Rabbeinu Hananel already, which is one of the earliest commentaries we have on Shas. Period, writes that Korech is not wrapping matzah around maror; it's wrapping maror around matzah. You wrap the maror because maror is lettuce, and you wrap maror. It's not horseradish; it's lettuce, and lettuce you wrap. It's like, again, think of sushi. You could either have the rice on the outside and the sushi and the right, and then the seaweed and then the vegetables. You could have the seaweed, the rice, and the vegetables. So Rabbi Hananel thinks that that korech is seaweed rice kilo, right? It's lettuce on the outside and matzah on the inside. So no raya. That doesn't mean he doesn't think it's soft. He just thinks that that's the way he thinks it wraps. And the Aruch HaShulchan thinks that korech doesn't mean to wrap. V'korech means to sandwich or to encapsulate or something like that. And this is so the main article that everyone draws on is a is the article The Thick and Thin of the History of Matzah by Rabbis Ari Zivitovsky and Ari Greenspan. What? Excellent article. Excellent article. And they note that, again, it could mean simply to surround or something. You could surround something, not necessarily in a wrap. And therefore, korech, once we established the original matzah was soft, so then we could say, oh, yeah, it looks like a lafa, and it's a lafa wrap. But if you only had korech alone, that wouldn't be a proof. Yes? Fine, that would, but that wouldn't really wrap. But the point is, this is not a wrap. Okay, but that's not a riot really, one way or the other. Yes.
Isn't there also the? I remember starting the sugya in Rabbi Ginsburg's year. There is where if you wrap it in something else and encapsulate it in like leaves, it doesn't count as a ma'aseh.
Give it. Give it not. That's not maror leaves. Maror leaves.
Yeah, that's also a few.
Okay, first of all, maror leaves. Whether or not you can wrap in maror leaves, first of all, there may be a difference between Zman HaMikdash and not Mikdash. And it's a machlok at Hillel Nachamim. But I'm not proving from the fact that whether we paskin like Hillel or Nachamim. The point is, the fact that Hillel would be korechet shows that it's physically something that you could do korech with. There's nothing to do with whether we paskin like Hillel or not. It's simply the mitziut. Right? That's a good clarification. Right? But it's not like, you can't say the machlok at Hillel Nachamim was, do we do korech because is korech possible? That's not what they said. It's, is it halachically okay? Because mitzvot mavatlo do it zu, and daraita derabanan, right? It's a very complicated sugya on kuf tetvav. My shir started it today. We'll finish it on Sunday. You know. What?
It's just funny. It's a very complicated sugya. We're finishing it in 2 days.
Well, we don't really have a choice. You know, Shiva ends on Wednesday. If we don't finish, then whatever. But it's a very confusing sugya. Thank you. Okay. But, yes.
One more thing I have in notes on this. Was introduced by the Shulchan, right?
Yes, I said that. Yeah.
So could it be that that's just backward, like post hoc justification of?
For sure. My point is that it just can't prove it.
How do you? Wouldn't that be you're trying to retrofit? Like, okay, we have hard matzah. How do we now say?
But what if he's right? Do you have evidence he's not right? My point is not a proof. You're right, the Aruch HaShulchan to say, what do you...
The Aruch HaShulchan is the first one to say, like, to do it like this, and...
Yeah, but Rabbi Hanan over 1,000 years ago, and he said that you're wrapping the matzah around, that you're wrapping the leaves around.
The proof that right? You need is...
My point is that it's not a proof, because if the Aruch HaShulchan says it, if the Aruch HaShulchan is right, it's not a proof. But forget that, if Rabbi Hanan was right, it's not a proof. And Rabbi Hanan probably had soft matzah, and nevertheless, he thinks Karech is lettuce around. The point is not a proof, because it could go either way.
Right.
Right, and it's not crazy. It's not like we don't know that you wrap things in vegetables. It's a kareh. We do that. I mean, again, sushi haraya. You know, something's green on the outside, something's the white. Yellow. Again, you've had sushi. Had sushi? I don't understand.
Sushi is
we wrap things in everything. What's the problem? Okay, fine. So what?
Those are all key lines.
Yes.
One of the reasons of Gebrox is that there might be flowers.
Can you? Okay, guys, what is...
We're not doing Gebrox right now.
God, okay. Guys, fine. So, we're going to go through a bunch of proofs, okay? A second proof that matzah was, at some point, probably soft, is the sugya that appears in Psachim, Daf Zayim. I'll just read you the summary of it, though, in Shulchan Aruch, and knock of the whole sugya, is the question of moldy bread. Good. You have my Makarot sheet. I know.
No, stop cheating.
I read through all.
Yes, I know. I gave you the article. I gave you the Makarot. It's wonderful. Good. You're doing Chazara. So the Gemara tells you that what? So Shulchan Aruch says, matzah pot bepezach beveikto ve'eni odim chametz matzah. If you have something in your house, and you don't know whether it's chametz matzah. Now, first of all, that alone should tell you that they look similarly, because I have never in my entire life, right, picked up a piece of bread and a piece of matzah and said, oh, which is which? Oh, I have no idea.
Also cracker matzah.
Le'adam, never happened. Right, so first of all, mutar afil bachila, you're allowed to eat it. Dazlin bata ruba. So we assume that it is matzah, because it's Pesach, so it's probably matzah. But he says, "V'imum u'pash harbe," if it's very moldy, she'ef shelo tabeis kolkach mishenem lebed, it couldn't have molded that much at the beginning of Pesach. Asvadayu chametz. Now, if you've ever had matzah, I still have matzah in my house from last year.
It doesn't get mold.
It doesn't get mold. It doesn't get. It can get stale eventually. It's hard to tell whether it's stale or just bad. But the point is that matzah, definitely matzah we have. Like you get, you know, manischewitz, whatever matzah. Again, it was created, right? The big business, as David mentioned on Tuesday, was for settlers going out west who needed food that would last for all of eternity. And it was so much, like you understand that manischewitz became so famous that, does anyone know the most famous time that manischewitz was invoked?
World War II?
Nope. When Buzz Aldrin landed on the moon, they weren't allowed to curse because they were being live streamed, so their equivalent of expletives became manischewitz. So, and he landed on the moon, his first exclamation was, "Man, oh, manischewitz." I mean, this is actually true, okay? This is during Apollo 7, I think it was Apollo 17. What? What? I'm getting this on, I'm just Googling it. Oh, sorry, it was him, and then Gene, whatever, on Apollo 17. He wasn't the only one. But yeah, so manischewitz became quite famous. But the Gemara says that, yeah, if it molded so much that by a few days in Pesach, you're like, oh, that couldn't have happened in 3 days. That happened in a week. But if it's late enough in Pesach that it might have gotten that moldy. So then, if the minhag is that you bake every day, so then you can be mekel. Feel mehubash harbe. Shanu tolim lomar b'chol yom afa patcham. V'nat lo l'vich harbe here b'le dapesh. Because maybe you'll say you put the hot bread on top of the hot bread every day. Heat makes it mold faster. But the point is that our matzah bikoshi ever molds. I have never seen mold on matzah in my entire life. That's not mulpash's mold.
In terms of the confusion, though,
yes.
Couldn't you have crackers that are chametz that you confuse with?
Theoretically, even though we're talking about bread, it could be, but we're talking about bread, seemingly. But that seems to be proof, too, is that it's something can mold quickly, which matzah can't, and that it seems to look, that's the whole point, very good, right? The third is the size. The size is that I love the size proof. So the tour quotes the minhag, and he says, would you like to tell us how big did they make the... They make it.
They make three matzahs out of one
sefer. They would, very good. They would make matzah out of three matzahs out of an isaron. So meaning each of them a third of an isaron. Zecher to the lach metoda. Now, how much is the isaron? Very good. So here to quote from Zivitovsky and Greenspan, even using the smallest opinion of the size of an isaron would mean that a thin matzah made from a third of an isaron would be a matzah for the record books, many, many feet in diameter. Something
not realistic, as it would not fit
in an oven. This custom indicates their matzah to be significantly thicker than any modern matzah. While this proves that they use thick matzah in the past, it's not definitively proved that they use soft matzah. It was thick. It could be hard. Hanami. What? Yeah. That's a slight problem. Yes. Now that the right now we compare it obviously now to the lechem apanim, the Professor Zohar Amar argues that they were even though they were somewhat hard, the lechem apanim was allowed to be up to a tefach thick, and they were matzah, right? Now this is slightly problematic because matzah that's a tefach thick, so matzah this thick. right? So Professor Amar says, well, they probably were not completely soft because they were shaped, right? But they had to be somewhat pliable, right? You can't make shmura matzah a tefach thick and try to eat it. That is not physically possible. Zeka zes siyut, right? Thank you, you're right. Nishtanu ateva. No, no. You're right. Right now, the Mishnah Berurah notes that this is not the minhag anymore. Okay, fine. Now.
There
you go. Okay, the next proof is the pillow proof. I love the pillow proof. So what's good. The Ber Hetev quotes the Maharshal, who says, where do you hide the afikoman until you're ready to eat it? In your pillowcase. Very good. And they said very simply, if you've ever tried, very good. If you would like to eat matzah meal for your afikoman, that's a great idea. If you would like to have matzah, pachot shayach to put it in your pillow, because, you know, on the other end, you put a pita on your pillow. The Seder.
Put it on the other side of your pillow.
Okay, very good. Okay. Then there is the thickness proof. The thickness proof. So this is wonderful. Shulchan Aruch says, how thick should it be? So he says, Eino since Sri Kenamitsu Yarin, the Hainu Litsar Bapat Kamin Chayavov. You shouldn't make shapes on your matzah on Pesach because that takes too long and then it's gonna rise. But you do make the holes, right, so it doesn't blow up, and you should make it quickly. Make it thin. Because they don't become chametz so fast. Okay, very good. So now you look at the Ramah. You say, aha, the Ramah is a source for a minute thin. Not so fast. The Ber Hetev says that you made it thinner than normal bread, right?
It's super thick.
But you make them an etzba thick.
Like a pizza. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but again, matzah, hard matzah, an etzba thick. Okay. Right, so again.
Hey, it's not even gonna cook it up. That's an ultimate expression of chisel and hammer to break.
Now,
use it as part of
the right now. Again, remember that the lechem apanim, which is what we learned some of this from, was allowed to be up to a tefach thick. Right, that's more than a finger. Now, a tefach thick, a finger maybe. I understand. Not if it's bread. Bread, we have a, you know, think of your challah. Your challah is more than a tefach thick. A nice big challah could be. But hard matzah would be a nightmare. Yeah. No, the thickness. Yeah, the thickness, not the height, the thickness. Right, exactly. It's matzah, you know, that's not. Very good. Then there's the freshness proof. Very good. The freshness proof. What's the freshness proof? So the Aruch HaShulchan writes as follows: the Yodin of the Adaiti Mishum Dizei Yadua Shemizman Kadmon Loya Open Kol Amatzok Pesach Loya Open Bechol Yom Meyavedach Pat Loyom Ze Adru Gadav Ludavar Chidush Vani Reiti Barcelona Meidaktim Shaya Open Kol Matzichem Lamoy Mikodem Amoy Shemit Arif Mashu Micham Itbadal Kol Misuro Vizin Minag Shalonu. He said, look, it used to be the minhag that you had to bake it every day. Then at some point they wanted to bake it before Pesach so that if chametz got mixed in, it would be batel. etc. But what's the point? They used to bake it every day. Because chametz on Pesach is not batel for ve'alef, but on Pesach, but before Pesach it is.
Even if it's designated for Pesach?
No, it's batel. If there's chametz, it's batel. That's why if you go, someone want to do me a favor, grab me. I saw it on the cottage cheese. I didn't notice it on the yogurt. You want to grab it to me for a second?
What's on it?
I'm going to show you what's on it. Let me show you what's on it. It doesn't say Kashrut Pesach. It says Kashrut Pesach, Erev Pesach.
Oh.
Why? Because this is a chumrah to buy these things before Pesach, because on Pesach, any chametz was in it, it wouldn't be batel filu be'alef. Mm-hmm. But before Pesach, when it's still heter, Correct, and that's why it says Kashrul Pesach Erev Pesach, to tell you no, it's Kashrul Pesach, and it was produced before Pesach, so it can rely on Bittel. That's why it says that. Cool. Yeah, that's what it says. That's why you'll see it on every, you start seeing it on everything now, which is not in the pretzels, obviously, but on, it'll say Kashrul Pesach Erev Pesach. This is a chumrah. No, that it doesn't, but in case it did, correct, there's a Chabad chumrah for that reason, that they don't have water that they didn't already have in their reshut before Pesach, so they fill up their bathtubs and they drink from whatever in the house and zoo, and fill up bottles, and after that, zoo. I didn't say all Chabad. There is a Chabad chumrah that does this. So my cousins who are Chabad, it's Ari's first cousin who does this. He does this. What? I don't have that many Jewish relatives. It's very unlikely to be mine. I have one halachically Jewish cousin in the world, okay? That's not likely to be. Anyways, it's not likely to be in my family. I just don't have a big family, that's all.
Does it necessarily mean that there's anything problematic, though, with this other group?
We're not there yet. Well, okay. La'at, people. Okay. Yalla, new. Okay. So. Again, there are other sugya that we could point to. So, for example, right, the Gemara in Pesachim Lamed Vav says, "Ein ofin pat ava." You don't bake thick matzah on Pesach, according to Beit Shammai Hill Matirid. And there, the Gemara explicitly says, "Vekama pat ava, amar avuna tefach." You just have to make sure it's less than a tefach. It could be like, 90% of a tefach. Again, that's what you're allowed to make. Are you out of your mind, right? No one is having hard matzahs going anywhere near a tefach, right? That's completely crazy. Now, there are some rishonim who lehalacha, based on the complexity of the sugya, because the Gemara later on says, my parava pat meruba, that maybe that parava just means you can't make too much matzah at one time, right? And according to some rishonim, that means that lehalacha, we even reject the tefach limitation, and bisimcha, you want to make one that's tefach, two tefach, five tefach, Again, how many makes, who's many people are involved, etc. Okay, so right, so we did that. We did the mega matzot. Mega matzot, yeah. Some proofs that I don't think I sent to you, but we can go, but you read the article, but we can go through others, is Shulchan Aruch writes that matzah shenefed ad she'im porsin oto e'in chutin m'shach mena yotzim ba. Right, that if you have, that matzah is ready if it's baked enough and you can pull it apart and the dough will not, and the sticky dough won't pull from the pieces. But you're talking about something that's soft, right? Mishnah Berurah gives another test of sticking in your finger and seeing if it comes out moist, which, again, this does not happen. Good. Then you have this wonderful proof from the Eruv. Because by the Eruv, we know that they did make some hard matzah. But hard matzah is not completely new. The Eruv case. How do we know that it was hard matzah? Very simple. Because in the halachic tzuvot of Rav Yehuda Igon, probably, not clear, but okay, probably Rav Yehuda Igon, they said, so the halacha is that for an Eruv Chatzera, what do you need? You need food. Where do you put the food? You put it in a place where everyone can access it, right? Where everyone can access it. Now we put in a shul, which is very complicated because it's supposed to be in a makom dira. A shul is not a makom dira. It's a huge machloket. Why that's mutter? What? It's not. Yeah, it's very complicated why you can do this. Okay, I'm not going to get into it. But the point is, well, do you want to be making Eruv Chatzeret every week? The Eruv.
Oh, you mean the literal Eruv.
The Eruv Chatzeret. There's two parts to the Eruv. There's the wall, and then there's the joint, and then there's the joint food that you have to have, right? So you need, right, now the joint food needs to be accessible, but you don't want to do it every week, right? If you're doing like an ad hoc one in the hotel for one Shabbos, it's fine. You take a challah, you're fine. For your communal Eruv, if you don't want to do it. So going back to Yehuda Igon, He said, yeah, they would make matzah on Erev Pesach, and the matzah they would use would last the entire year. It would, from Pesach to Pesach. Now,
would it have to have been edible?
What?
Would it have to have remained edible?
Yeah, it has to be edible. It's not food. It doesn't work. It was edible for a whole year. Now that sounds like our matzah, right? Ah. Whoa, so what does this prove? Let's be very careful. What does this prove? Very good. There's two types. It doesn't prove that there wasn't our matzah. It proved that there was. What? This is Rav Yehuda Igal in the Halach Ketuvah. Right? In the 15th century, the Lechet Yosher explicitly said, right, this is that they would make matzah on Erev Pesach with a huge hole in the middle, and they would hang it in the winter residence, guys, of Rabbi Yisrael Israelin, also known as the Truman Adeshet, right? And he said that it once happened that it broke because it got moldy, so they used matzah, they used bread, that job is, and then they matzah until the next Pesach, right? So you see, the Marivayel also calls it what? It got moldy once during the year.
Right.
Once happened that it once got moldy, but again after 6 months or whatever. Now even more surprising is that we find. Okay, don't do that. Don't do that. Thank you. No. With a big knife, please don't do that. Is that Rav Kafich, or however you want to pronounce it? What says that in Yemen, they would also make the air for a whole year. Now, we know that in Yemen they were using soft matzah. So what does this show? That even in Yemen, they were... So you would say either they're using hard matzah, but Rabbi Zivotofsky and Greenspan did an experiment. No, because he said it was for the whole year. So he did an experiment, and they said, okay, fine. Maybe they use soft matzah. See what happens. So they said that they hung a standard pita outside in hot, arid Israel weather. And they said that it dried out, but it never became moldy. It remained completely edible. And that when you took it down, it could be eaten as a cracker. They did an experiment. I don't know what you want from me. They did an experiment. So apparently, in the right climates, if you dry it out,
you soaked it after.
Right, and they said people normally would dip it, so it was fine. You dipped it, and it was.
But year round, then this is also during the winter. It doesn't really get.
Right now, it is also interesting that we have different evidence of what matzah looked like from different illustrated Haggadot, right? Yes. But they're definitely the ones starting in like the 18th century and stuff like that. You do start to see hard matzah. I mean, you can see, right? You have hard matzah. The bird head Haggadah. The bird head Haggadah. The bird head Haggadah with matzah. Yes, this is the bird head Haggadah.
Is it just the Haggadah where everyone's...
Correct. It's from the 14th century.
Why?
For the children.
Okay. Now, based on this, right, so we get that historically, the Zivotofsky and Greenspan point out that probably by mid-18th century, there were both thick and thin matzahs in Ashkenaz. And the reason, the Adnei Pal says, because thick matzahs need a hotter oven. So the thick matzah, they called rib matzah, because they would grate it with a hand grater, which in Yiddish is a ribeisen, right, into matzah meal, and they would bake that first. And then he notes that some bakers would do the thin matzah first. So their conclusion is as follows. They said the data presented above paint a picture of several factors playing a role in yielding the type of matzah used today. It's likely that in the Talmudic period, matzah was thicker and softer and resembled standard bread baked by being smacked on the sidewall of an oven being baked there. Removing it after it was fully baked, yet before it falls off, burned on the cold, below is a skill termed by the Gemara Ridiyat HaPat. All of this is impossible with hard matzah. In the period of the Rishonim, there was a move, for halachic reasons, to bake longer-lasting matzah, probably resulting in thinner and harder matzah. The process was driven by the halachic chumrah that we mentioned before, by the Aruch HaShulchan that summarizes, to bake all matzah before Pesach to take advantage of bittul. This is because on Pesach itself, chametz is not batel by a majority of non-chametz bread, but prior to Pesach, it is batel, and thus this approach alleviated the concern of a tiny bit of chametz in the matzah. So then what happened? So they write, the march toward ever drier and thinner matzah continued unabated. A sociological factor has been suggested as a partial explanation. The social upheavals that were part of the impetus that led to the introduction of machine matzah might have had a role in the thin matzah. As the country population migrated to the huge urban centers in the early 18th century, people no longer baked the small quantities a family needed. Baking became centralized and done in large quantities. In Ashkenazic lands, as this happened, there was supposedly a move to bake pre-stale matzah. I love that. What do I call it? Pre-stale. It's like pre-ripped jeans, you know? It's like we charge extra. Very thin, hard, and dry. However, we have found nothing in the written record to support this claim. And it was a scene in early 14th century Spain. They were already baking all their matzah before Pesach. It was lasting the holiday. Not only did the matzah 700 years ago last a week, many places were already using matzah as an Erev. And thus, they had matzah that was edible after a year. Urbanization in the last 300 years cannot be seen as a significant factor in the introduction of modern, thin, pre-stale matzah, if the matzah they had was already lasting a year. Nonetheless, it cannot be argued that in Europe, the production of matzah became centralized, while in places of Yemen it remains until today, Rather, it seems that the final stage in the evolution of the cracker thin matzah was because of another halachic chumrah. The concern that with thick matzah, it's more difficult to prevent and ascertain chimots, right? So as seen above, the Ashkenazic authorities, and I'll come back to it in a second, of the 17th and 19th centuries were concerned about thick matzah becoming chametz and made a concerted effort to produce thinner and thinner and thinner matzah from drier and drier and drier batter, as you guys saw on Tuesday, right? Oh, two, well, 1 second. This became easier to do thanks to machines. They could knead very dry batter, because as you saw, it's very hard to do it, but machines can do anything. But the process took time, and for centuries, probably the 17th and 19th, there were two types of matzah being made, thick to be grated into matzah meal and thin to be eaten. The super hard thin matzah that is used today can simply not be rubbed against a grater the way a potato is ground. Eventually, possibly thanks to commercial production of matzah meal and probably in the early 20th century, we didn't need the thick ones, so the ultra-thin cracker-like matzahs that are ubiquitous today became the sole matzah. This historical process seems to have occurred in both Ashkenazic and Sephardic lands, with the single significant exception in Yemen, where soft matzah continued to be baked daily, and the Yemenite Jews continue until today. The element of the modern thin hard matzah that seems to have been driven solely by halachic concerns rather than sociological or practical issues, right? So there are those who claim that it was based on, right, that it was sociological, it was about being in cities. But again, right, there were the halachic reasons, because again, let me just read it to you. Give me 1 minute. Right, that the Ritval already writes that, quoting the Ra'ah, Shenagua olam lasot matzo shalchol vadaka. Right, that the developed is meant of making it thin. And the Beit Yosef says, what's he saying, right? Right, how could you say, right, they didn't even mention the one more than the tour. So the Shulchan Aruch says, yeah, you shouldn't make it bigger than a tefach. Mishnah Brura quotes the positions that, you know, you can be more lenient, but b'di'eved, as long as it's less than a tefach thick, right, You should make it even thinner, but Shulchan Aruch writes Enos and Bezach Pat Ava Tefach. Mishabura says less than that it could be mutter, though you should be machmir and try to make it even thinner. But Yesh Matir and Bava Tefach. But the point is that there was this, right, people were pushing and pushing and pushing to make it thinner and thinner and thinner, and right, machines again make that possible. So the combination of the chumrah to bake in advance, which we already saw in the Aruch HaShulchan, plus thin, you know, that seems to have brought about thin matzah. Okay.
What's the ideal?
What do
what, you know.
Yes, Ellie.
Regarding the issue, the concerns of the Brooks and flower not being, our non-reactive flower was
yes.
being in the so, doesn't that come about because of the cohort themselves?
Yeah, at some level.
Specifically because...
Yes, yeah, so I don't want to get too much into Brooks, but you're right. Right, that... Gebroch at some level is a basis of this because the faster and faster we bake matzot and the drier and drier, the more likely there were patches that
so
we missed.
Would it make more sense to add increase the flour water ratio so that there's more water to raise?
Kind of maybe, but look, Gebroch is not a minug. I will tell you like this. Gebroch is not a minhag that I have any interest in spending a long time defending. No, I understand. Yeah, I understand. I'm just not...
Because these kumrot caused that to happen, why don't we just jump back to the point...
I'm really not... Look.
It's assuming you care about Gebroch. You're saying from a Gebroch standpoint, this should be a thing.
No, the reason why Gebroch...
Look,
because it was a concern. Because of these kumrot, it was a concern.
Listen, Ellie, not to be motzi las and any minhag rachmanos on that, I know. But I'm just saying that gebrachs of all minhagim, there's this thing. I don't know if it's apparently in our blood if we're litvaks, which you know, I actually am. Like also like my grandfather who is not from, but like was when he was a kid. Right, at some point he heard me use the word Litvak. He's like, Litvak. Haven't heard that phrase in a long time. We're Litvak. We're like I'm Mamish Litvak. Right. Like, Mamash. So we have this thing in our blood that, you know, we don't want to hold of, you know, we don't want to hold of Gebroch or, right? It was famous that the early Litvak, the early Litvak, like the Gra, whatever, they would... break matzah into their soup and eat it in the window on Pesach night, just to make a point. And as I have from one of my friends, I'm not going to get into this, but I will tell too much. But I will tell you that one of my friends in high school, his father was a shamash to the Rav for a while, and his family didn't eat gebrachs. His mother's family did, and when they got married, his father wanted to keep the minog. And the his mother had all her recipes from her mother, and you know she
were all gebrachs.
Yeah, she didn't want to. She didn't want to keep gebrachs, so we figured shamash the Rav. Let's go ask the Rav. And as he told me the story, I wasn't there, but he told me that the Rav told him in no uncertain told her, "You cook what you want to cook." And if he wants to starve, he can starve, right? Right. So, right. I have a misoira that we're not, you know, that I don't spend too much time thinking. Again, I chatai masirayom. I'm not chassidish. On my mother's side, I mean, going back generations, I guess. But like, I don't spend too much time on it.
The issues with this chain of events isn't an attack on Gebroch or this.
Even though I will say I have a lot of akara tov, I have a lot of akara tov to Gebroch. Because now that my kids are celiac, any place that has a hashkach on it that says lulo shruya or lulo gebrachs, I know my kids can eat. So I must say that now I have hakar latov to gebrach, despite my, you know, these misers. But the point is that, look, it's a minhag. It's a little bit of an odd. No, I understand. My point is that it's sort of a strange minhag that no one quite knows where it came from. No one really knows where it came from. No. You know, I mean, like, whatever. No, I understand. No, I get it. No, I understand. The Alter Rebbe says it's because of unbaked flour in the middle of the matzah, right? I get that. And there's the flour dust, which may coat the matzah, and if water gets on it, I understand. And I get your point that both of those problems are created by hard matzah, right? Because they... I understand. I got it. I get it. I understand what you said. But I don't want to get too much in the rough. I get it. I'm not disagreeing with you.
It's not like a gebrach thing, it's an evolution towards thinner matzah. No, it's that the
evolution towards hard and mass or whatever created the problems around gebrach. I understand that, but what does that prove? So, like, I don't know what that proves.
I mean, that these kumru create more problems for themselves because it reduces.
If you think that the problems of gebrach are something you have to hold up.
Yes, but if you don't, then it's irrelevant.
Correct, meaning it's not like. Right? You're assuming it's a real halakhic problem. Then I have to say, why would you create a real halakhic problem? You think it's...
taking dry batter, heating it for 2 seconds, throwing it in the oven, and having unreacted clumps of flour. That was a real halakhic problem with thicker matzah. As soon as you went thin, that's not a problem.
No, you needed it well enough.
No, you didn't. That's the issue.
Maybe you did.
I'm not going to go down the Brox rabbit hole, but... You're getting there. We're getting there. Chill. Okay. But the point is that historically, guys, so historically, what do we have? Guys, historically, what do we have? So it was probably soft, and at some point, right, it changed to hard, and many cultures at this point have hard. So here's the question. Right. So now, the question which I find more interesting, like the historical question is very interesting. The question is, okay, but now what? So I've proved it historically. Yalla. Right? Let's assume that our matzah is still halachic matzah, which it probably is, especially if you think there were two types of matzah. And again, if you're Kobeya Suda, even a part of the Kisnin, so you're allowed to wash and bend. So call it matzah. And Sfardim, as far as I understand, on Pesach they do wash because it's the bread of Pesach. So can Ashkenazim eat it? So what does that hang on? So it hangs on two questions. Okay, two very important questions. What are the two questions that it hangs on, of whether Ashkenazim can eat soft matzah on Pesach? What are the two questions? Please clarify.
Whether other minhag was not to eat it on Pesach because they
clarify.
Was it an accidental evolution?
So good. One is there such a minhag at all? Meaning, we don't eat it, but does that mean we have a minhag not to eat it? You can buy soft matzah here. It's not a big deal.
No, here, but not in America.
Yeah, you can buy it in America. In Brooklyn, what are you talking about? You can buy it. It's not so hard. Yeah. So the first question is, was there a minhag to not eat it? Or is there no such minhag? And what's the second? That's a broader question, but not even going that far, which is, the other question is how do you deal with the reality of different communities? Right. Is it plausible to say, right, especially if you don't have evidence of it, that, can you just say, look, the Temanim have it, right? We don't eat it, but we don't have a minhag, so we can rely on the Temanim and how to do it. Right? One is the question, do we ever have a minhag, an active minhag not to? The second question is, okay, but also, what do we do? What is the effect of the fact there's a Temanim minhag? How much do you really believe in, these firm distinctions? Temanim do it, and therefore what, right? So do you say, Temanim do it in Ashkenazim, Temanim, they're different briot, right? We don't have that minhag, right? Or do you say, right? In Ochanami. Now, this one is, I will be honest, guys, that here, this is a relatively... there's a relatively a little bit easier of a question to answer, but there are other cases where this question of how much do we view, are we machshev the difference in cultural minhagim as if the communities are completely separate is important. So, for example, a related case, not really this case, but okay, just to sort of get you in the headspace of thinking about it, locusts. Right, so Ashkenazim don't have a minhag, don't have a mesorah about which locusts are kosher. Temanim do. Okay, do you say that Ashkenazim don't have a minhag and therefore we can't eat it, or do you say, look, we don't have a minhag, we don't have a non-minhag, we just don't have a minhag. We lost the mesorah and the Temanim have a mesorah, right? So, or do you say now certain people will be very uncomfortable? It's like Ashkenazim don't have a minhag, and then you'll have people like your Shechter who will say, so we don't have Masara, they do. So we eat it. And apparently someone, I was talking 3 days ago, I was at a Sheva Rachot, and an old friend of mine from high school, Rabbi Shai Horowitz, so his brother, he wasn't here, but his brother, Rabbi Noam Horowitz, was at the Sheva Rachot, and we were talking about Shai's Mishloch Mono, which was locusts, because he sent out, because his theme was that the Rambam says you're supposed to spend less money on Mishloach Mano than on Matanot Lev Yonim. So he wanted to make low-cost low cast. I'm sorry. I don't want you on for my lunch. Anyways, not important. So he sent out chocolate covered locust as Michel Chaman.
That sounds pretty good.
I've never had one.
Anyways, I saw that. How did I see this? Because I saw I'm Facebook friends with one of the teachers at YBT, right? Matt Schneeweiss, who put a picture of him eating it, but of course complaining because he, like Roy Ginsberg, is on keto, and he's like, why do you put the chocolate, right? Like, you know, without it, it's like high protein, like the keto, like, dream. Anyways, point is, Rav Schechter, right, why Rav Schechter is very machbid on the, is very, very insistent that Ashkenazim can eat it, and apparently at some point, someone gave him a locust. He said, does it have a hashkacha? And he said, yeah, right, Slifkin put a hashkacha on. He's like, okay, and then he ate it. And as I heard from Noam, his only response was, aren't you supposed to, like, fry this or something? Like, we have to fly it in some spices. I mean, you know, like, because you buy it, like, in a jar. Like,
isn't the locust case? Nobody would say that the
So there is the Chassam Sofer argues that there was a ban on thick matzah, right? So some people look at that and say that there was some sort of Ashkenazi takana yiminag to not eat this stuff. So what?
Show me the.
That's the basis of Chassam Sofer. Again, in general, I have found three psukim. Basically, there are three possible directions you could take whether Ashkenazim could have it. What are the three directions?
Yes, no, maybe.
Yeah, yes, no, maybe. Very good. Very good. I'm very happy for you. You got it, right? So the most strong formulation of Usser I found was, and this was a claim that it's Mamish Usser, I found in the Rabbinical Council of Victoria. Yes, Australia. The Vada Rabbanim de Victoria in the second of Nisan 5771. RCV statement for immediate release. It has been brought to the attention of the Rabbinical Council of Victoria that despite it having expressed grave concerns over the availability of soft loftasaya matzah before Pesach last year, this product has once again become available to the public for purchase and consumption. The RCV therefore wishes to reiterate its stance on this matter, and following consultation with local kashrus experts, strongly recommends against the consumption or ownership of these matzos during Pesach. All member rabbis of the RCV have been appraised of the halachic issues involved. Should consumers seek further information, we urge them to consult their Rav or Kashrus authority as a matter of priority. Additionally, please advise that the supplier of these matzahs has stated on his website that Rabbi Yosef Shalom Eliashiv Shlita, a leading halachic authority, not Shlita anymore, now Zatzal, a leading halachic authority in Israel. I love that when you see it in Sfarim. It's Shlita, and then in brackets says Zatzal, because when the book was published, they were alive, and now the republishing, they're not. It happens. People die.
But they also change it from Shlita to Zatzal.
Because it was not published that way, right? Look, you should know this is important, right? There are certain books by authors you can literally date based on how they talk about people. So one of the best ways is there are certain tshuvot you can date it to the year, because there are three ways rabbis or the sons of rabbis will refer to their father in one of three ways. If they're alive, shlita. If they're passed away, well, depends. In the year after they die, what's the halacha? You don't say zatal. No, you say hareini kaparat mishkavo. I am an atonement for him. But you only say that in the year after the death. And then after you start saying the normal zatal or zal, right? So you can actually map in certain tshuvot, you actually know, even if they don't date it, when they refer to people, because they'll say shlita, hareini kaparat mishkavo. If you ever see it, it's hey chaf mem. But that's what it is, hareini kaparat mishkavo, right? You also say that about a Rebbe. I remember the year that Rav Aaron died, and they were encouraging people to give shiurim on his Torah, right? So that's what we were saying. How's Harani Karparat Mishkavo? So anyways, they asked Rabbi Yashiv, and they people claim that he said it was fine. Rabbi Yashiv was subsequently approached by this matter and is explicitly requested that the following statement be publicized in his name. Asur latet hechsher lematzot rakot likilot Ashkenaz. It is forbidden to give a hechsher for these soft matzah for Ashkenazim. Kizu pirtsa biyadud Ashkenaz. It is a breach of the tradition of Ashkenazim. Ein alzem masorah. We have no tradition. V'af pam lo nagul afsher achilat matzah rakot. And we never allowed the eating of it.
We have never allowed the eating.
Ever, ever, ever. Yes. I don't know what you want. One second. Now, the Shlomo Zalman Orbach also seems to have a minog. He's a minog minog also daka cholef shar. The English goes to the chol matzah avayuter miragil. Right, he says, yeah, you're supposed to have the really thin, and the Shlomo Zalman seems to think that there is a minhag Ashkenaz to not have any matzah that's thicker than the normal, to just not have it. So there are people who think that the fact that we didn't have it is a actual minhag to not eat it. Not that we didn't have a minhag to eat it, but a minhag not to eat it. Yeah, they're treating it as chametz, that's correct. They have a very strong, yeah, I did not say I agreed with it. No, what? Thank you for that. Very wonderful. Then at the opposite extreme, you have what is the opposite extreme?
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
yes, thank you. Very good. Very good.
Okay. That's the opposite. If I have to make it every day.
So this was the position taken both by Rabbi Aviner, who's a leading dati lumi rabbi, as well as Rav Schechter. So Rav Aviner, I will read to you. Guys, come on. It's real late and I gotta get back. My voice is dying here. Rav Aviner was asked, Ha'im mutar l'ashkenazim lechol matzot rakot? Can Ashkenazim have? Right. So if you don't know about Rav Aviner is one of the leading poskim in the more the Chardal side of the community, but the originalized world. He's well known for publishing these like one line chuvot. He's one of those, online things. His chuvot range from, Some of them are Cain, some of them are hysterical, right? He has like a very famous hysterical chuvot about skulas for Shalom Bias. Yes. A skula is like a, how do you translate skula?
A segula, it's a marriage demon.
Like a what? No, it's not a, it's like a lucky charm type thing. Whatever it is. So he's like, so that someone asked him, do you have a skula for Shalom Bayis? He's like, of course, I have a whole list. And he like writes this whole tshuva. You should make sure to do the dishes. You should. Like, and he's like, writes a whole thing. Like, I have very good advice for you. Good, great skulas. He's, skulas for learning Torah. For remembering Torah, you should learn. And he's like very, his tshuva are very funny. So, they range from like the very, very erudite to the hysterical because, you know, people ask funny questions and he's answering thousands of shilas a day. Anyways. he says, Omnam yesh oshrim, some say osir. Umodim shavari ochlem avachadelu. He said there are people who say, listen, they used to do it, but now there's a minhag not to. V'she'en mesor latir, and we have no mesor to be matir. And then he says, aval ein gam mesor lasor. He says, oh, come on. There's no minhag to be oser. You're right. We don't need it. There's no minhag. What are you talking about? And he says, the Ramah says they were thick. The Shai Tshuva says, come on. Right? Because it's a question of whether it's an Ashkenazi minhag. And let me just read you Rav Schechter, and then I'll take your point. One second. Rav Schechter, I have to read Rav Schechter's handwriting. Whoa. I need to concentrate. I have it on my source in Rav Schechter's original handwriting, okay? Give me a second, okay? I mean, he has neat handwriting, but still. You can see. His handwriting's pretty good. It says, B'sholchon Arach, Arachayim, Kuv Samachet, Siv Zayin, Katav, Amichaber, She... Kayom with, oh God. Yeah. Pen the line. Okay, right. When he says it should be mizonot, blah, blah, blah. Even though Ashkenazim always had these hard matzot. But the Achronim say that, B'leil Seder Pshita Shebrachal Mamotzi. Vaharbe svaradim ochlem matzot shehem ke'en svog. He said, many svaradim have it, and they look like a sponge. Lo kanal. It seems obvious that Ashkenazim can eat it because when the Ramash calls the Ramah, he said when the Ramah says make it thin, he doesn't mean crackers. He just means less than a tefach. That's what he says, and that's what the Mishnah Berurah says lahedya. And therefore, he says you can have soft matzah. Kachaze, you can have soft matzah serva. Now, there are people who have officially banned it. So apparently Melbourne did it as well. Yeah. Now, Rav Asher Weiss is a very wonderful trooper. Rav Asher Weiss takes a middle approach. And he says, on the one hand, Mekra Din is probably mutter because there was never really a minhag to not eat them. However, he says, because there are communities that didn't eat them, and maybe it's not really a minhag, but it is like this less clear category called Al Titosh Torah Imecha. To not leave the customs of your therefore he thinks that Ashkenazim should stick to hard matzah, but he does say that if someone's sick, you can use soft matzah, because not me'ikar hadin. Now, Rav Schechter, this is a classic clarification. Rav Schechter had written this in response in theory, and then people were like, aha, you see that Rav Schechter gave a hashkacha to that. He's like, no, I didn't give a hashkacha to that. I'm saying in theory. He's like, that doesn't mean that every place that bakes soft matzah is good at it, right? Obviously. But like I said, this isn't part of a much broader question, which is, do you view these things that Ashkenazim don't do or do? Like, how much do you view, A, do we look for, we don't do it, therefore it's a minhag? And also, like, how much do we encourage thinking in halachic terms in this way of actively dividing between our community? My tendency is to minimize it as all possible. That's my tendency in general. If, you've ever talked about minhagim, you know that I think that, right? That I don't look to maximize differences between Ashkenazim and Sfaradim. For many reasons, in terms of how I think about minhag and the like, but definitely when there doesn't seem to be a real minhag to like say, well, Ashkenazim don't do it, and therefore, like, if I have strong evidence, it's a minhag. Okay, fine, but I don't like create. So it's not my tendency. But then again, in those ways, I've been very influenced by Rav Schechter. Yeah.
Wait, so I have an interesting thing to add also, because I remember reading this with regards to the Chelet. Rabbi Soloveitchik said that in his family, they did not believe in resurrecting these old kind of.
The Rav said by Tchelet that he had a Masar, and there are different versions of it, but in some versions there's a specific tradition of the Beit HaLevi that by Tchelet you need Masara to reignite it. That's not true of everything.
I thought he was saying it for things in general.
Nah. It's different version, but this tradition that goes around the Rizker family is that Tchelet is unique. It's not everything is like that. Right? Again, not everything is created equal. You can't just draw parallels and say, oh, this, that. No, I understand. If you ask me which is more likely to be fine, the soft matzah or locusts, soft matzah is more obvious to me.
Yeah,
which
one do you have?
If your kids weren't there in the
story. There you go. Right. So this is a problem, right? Is that, especially this year, last year wasn't a problem. We started the kids right after the Seder. But this year is a problem because I don't want to get into the complexity now of what celiacs should do. It's a very complicated sugya. I've been fielding enough questions about it the last few weeks because, someone was asking about it online, and I said, listen, I'm happy to consult with anyone because, I deal with it yom-yom.
So if that wasn't an issue, which matzah would you have?
So I use hard. It's very hard to find soft that's affordable, that's enough.
And not stale yet.
It's just hard. The only reason I honestly, I have no halakha problem with getting soft. reasonably between just like I'm just having mitzvah, and otherwise we're gonna have minimal matzah over Pesach, despite what we're gonna do in Shira of mitzvah. It's just matzah is a nightmare. Just know this: hard matzah especially is a nightmare with celiac because there's crumbs everywhere.
That's
true. Right?
Soft also designs. It's so hard to
now when I'm at home. I wear like hard a matzah. Shirt.
No, Nechanami, I'm just saying with four of my kids that are celiac, like, I'm just like I'm getting what I need and I'm done. Yeah. You know, like after that, like we literally like. You know, like we literally, you clear off the table, you sweep up the floor because you have the kids. Crumb. It's not just.
It's a crumb. Is it really like?
It's 20 parts per million is when they start reacting. So, yes. Yes.
It's less than a crumb.
Yeah, it's less than a crumb. So, and especially you have little, you know, we still have babies. I mean, not babies, there's two, but still, they eat off the floor, right? You know, there's something on the floor. So, crumbs get on the floor, they'll eat it. I'm the wrong person to ask. In my house, we're dealing with different problems.
You almost have all this kind of stuff also.
It's not cigonus. It's not that dangerous. No. It's not cigonus. It's not gonna die. Celiac is not an allergy. Right? It's not an allergy.
Discomfort.
I thought it's
no. Like it's not what? What? No. Celiac is that your body can't digest it because it views it as like a pathogen, and it damages your intestines slowly but surely. It can be a carcinogen. And it can cause very severe stomach aches and in the short run. Different people get different things. It's symptomatic. There are people who are asymptomatic celiac. But symptomatic celiac, it'd be bad. But it's not going to be there. Celiac's a different story. I think in my share, I'll try to do it. The oat question, celiac question. It's a complicated sugya because it's both, is oats one of the five grains? And also even if they're going to get sick, do they have to have it? Like, what is the parameters of a p'tur? How sick are they going to get?
Or what
they're
doing
that? Spelled also has gluten. Less gluten.
From what day are you doing?
I don't know. It depends when I finish Korech and I finish.
Right.
Very good. Well, my share we're doing Korech, and then we're going to do the question whether there's a mitzvah to eat matzah the other 7 days, right? The other 6 days, not the other 7 days, the other 6 days, and then we'll see how much we do. Anyways, but again, just going back to just summarize. But again, my tendency is. I find that part the more interesting thing is this the minna question. But again, my tendency is like Rav Schechter, is to not look for things that are. To say that, well, Ashkenazim don't do it, and therefore we have a minog. It's not, right? We don't necessarily have a minog to not do something just because we don't do it. Yeah, sure. No, Konami. Yeah.
Do you think that soft matzah, like if I enjoy soft matzah more with it, which any like normal human does, so do you think that it's better, Maker, than to have that by the Suda?
Yeah, no, yeah. I think if you, I think, like, I think, look, I think, I in this sense, I very much uncomfortable with Shechter's Pesach. That soft matzah is fine, and yeah, if you really enjoy it, again, it's a little bit annoying. Like I know that right, Ginsburg has his like go-to Tamani guy who bakes it for him fresh right before the Seder. He did for a while though. What? What?
He does it too.
You could bake your own.
You could bake your own. Again, that's with celiac, I'm not doing it, right? No, in a Hanami, if you enjoy it and you want to do with it, you want to get it, you know, you want to have it. It's fine. Again, for me at this point, this is all like mood. I'm not starting to bake it on Erev Pesach. It's like the siut. What? Maybe. Again, I don't think you're not yotze with the heart, obviously. But if you enjoy it more, and it's not going to kill your stomach, and yeah, whatever, you won't have to have a bottle of prune juice to survive Pesach. Anyways. So, but I do think that, so guys, I do think that this question of soft matzah, it's just, again, it's a very interesting question, both, in the terms of the history of halacha, and also in terms of minhagim, in terms of the interaction of different communities and the like. Again, halacha, I think it's fine. It isn't the easiest thing to find, and it does go bad very fast, because, again, the standard way that Tamanim did it was they baked it fresh every day. So if you have your own little oven, if you're tzvi, and you have your own little oven for it, so...
Does it have to be a special oven like they have in the shuk, like I've seen it, where they like slap it?
Saying the circle oven that they slap... No, it doesn't have to be that.
You could, I mean, it's... But I think it's better when you do it that way. Yeah. I think that's how it's supposed to be baked, is on the thingy. Yeah, but I think that's not how you're meant to make it. And again, you need a... And again, to make it in your oven, you need a kosher oven, you need a... You know, it's... Yeah, but that was also, that's on the oven. That's not like our oven. He's putting it in a stone oven, right? It bakes differently. Again, I'm no expert in this stuff, but it bakes differently. But this is already a question for bakers, not like for me. I'm sure you can get recipes from people. Okay, any other questions about the soft matzah, about minog, about whatever? Okay, good. Fine.
Now that I know that I can have it. And
no, I think you can have it. Again, I think it's it. I think if you, put it this way, you find it, you want to make it, be careful, make sure you know what you're doing. Svi, I'm sure, knows what he's doing.
Do you think you should spend extra money on it, like if it's something that you enjoy more for the stew, though?
If you want to.
Yeah.
If you want to.
Is it about enjoying it more?
What? Would eating worse matzah be more like a moldy?
No, it's not Harris. It's a din and stew, though. It's part of
your stew. Oh, if you that.
There's
no philosophical that. I mean, maybe you have that. Maybe. I went for the Seder already. For the Seder, but hold on. Maybe if you want to be mad, you're right. Meaning there is that's at least a recorded. There is a recorded minhag of only having things that are. But for the Seder, it's not a big deal. Correct. Okay. Shkoyach, guys.